So in my talk today, I'm going to talk about the challenge of digital preservation broadly. I'll talk about State Records' approach to digital preservation and keeping digital archives. And then if we've got time, I'll talk about some of the things that we're sort of looking to do in the future as well, sort of what's next and upcoming things. But to start off with some background, so the Digital State Archives team was established at State Records in 2011. So we got project funding for 3 years to establish a digital archive. And what that meant was State Records was going to have the capacity for the first time to accept transfers of digital archives from agencies. So until then, although agencies were making and keeping records that would ultimately be required as state archives in a digital form, until 2011 we had no capacity to accept transfers. So agencies were required at that point to just retain those records. Until we did, and then, so we had so there's a 3 year project period, and so we were funded by the government to establish a digital archive, and that meant assembling a team, building the physical infrastructure at Kingswood. So we have a digital archive server room in Kingswood where digital archives are stored. It meant defining our processes and building or adopting tools to support our work as well. And in the business case, what we said was that rather than doing much of that ourselves, we would just adopt the approach of the National Archives of Australia and just use their tools, essentially. But we didn't, so I'll go into a little bit of detail about why we didn't go that route and sort of how we currently do our work in the body of my presentation. So that 3 year funding finished in 2014, and at that point we were given continuation funding for 4 years till 2018, and as part of that continuation funding we moved to a business as usual posture. So the first 3 years was a project phase, and we weren't actually accepting transfers in the period, we were just dealing with some pilot projects. But since 2014 we've been open for business essentially. So if you're in an agency and you have digital records that you maintain that you know are required at state archives under a retention and disposal authority, you can now approach us and ask to transfer that material to our custody. Digital archives, of course, aren't just the Word documents and PowerPoints and PDFs that might be sitting in a PIM system, for example. They can really take any form, and that's the advice also that our digital record keeping team give, is that it's important that you're in ensuring the preservation and integrity of all of the digital records that your agencies are generating, that you're not just looking at your EDRMS systems necessarily, but if your agency is also working outside that, for example, in database-backed business systems or using cloud services, if your email sits outside of BIM, if you're smaller agencies and you haven't even got to the point of having a TRIM. So you're, for example, the Wild Dog Destruction Board, and all of your information is in network drives or on people's laptops. All of that information can potentially be required as state archives. This really, digital archives can take any form: databases, documents, emails, cloud systems. The digital archives team at State Records isn't just responsible for the digital state archive. So we also manage the OpenGov website. We also manage Data New South Wales in conjunction with a team in the Department of Finance and Services. We're also responsible for the website, and we seem to be the whole technical support partner for State Records at the moment as well. So we're quite a small team, but we have a number of hats, and that I won't really talk much about that, but it will become important at the end of my presentation where I talk about sort of where we're heading and what our plans are. So Vint Cerf is he's one of the founders of the internet, and he currently works at Google. And the digital preservation community was quite excited last year when he started doing press interviews. He was I think there was a piece in Time magazine. And he was talking about the problem of digital preservation, which was a problem that had excited archivists and librarians and people working in the museum, but it hadn't had much impact in the broader community. So we're very excited to see Vint Cerf, this eminent technologist, talking about the problem of digital preservation. So, and he really frames it in the traditional way that people think about the problem of digital preservation, and that is that, okay, you've got all of these old formats of documents, backwards compatibility is a problem, and we've also got a whole lot of this stuff, so that's really quite frightening, because, you know, we might have, so if and when you're looking at the content of all of those systems you're moving into OneTrim, is there potential for there to be really old document formats that are difficult to access these days, like old Word star files, for example, or any of those old WordPerfect, those document formats that we used to use that we don't use any longer, and are we able to still access that information today? And so this is really the kind of traditional way that the problem of digital preservation has been framed, that 10 years on from creating a document in which to store information, we can't be sure that we can still access that information. And then also, because it's digital and because people are create so much digital stuff these days, there's a whole lot of it as well. So that's the other kind of part of the problem, is that we've got a lot of this stuff, and kind of framing the problem in this way frames it, I think during my talk, and there'll be quite a lot of parallels to what you've been doing, which is really interesting, because you were talking at the very start of your talk about how it's not just a technical problem, there's also the social and the people problem as well, and that often that can be the really thorny part of it. But framing the challenge of digital preservation in the way that Vint Cerf does really frames it as simply a technical problem, and you're looking for technical solutions. And because of the vast archives of digital content, really framing it as a kind of people problem, there's no people solution to that. You've got to automate any solution if you've got any kind of hope of kind of solving the problem, if you think about it in this way. And actually, Vint Cerf, he does, because, you know, his kind of secret agenda in kind of going out to the press like this was he was pushing a new product called Digital Vellum, which is the kind of technical solution for digital preservation. And that is to package your file format in a kind of larger package that has information about this original software that was necessary to render that. So you're kind of storing objects within a larger context to enable you to access them in the future. But Vint Cerf isn't alone in framing digital preservation as a kind of technical problem. That's really been the way that the digital archives community itself has looked at it. And if you look at products like Archivematica or Rosetta or Preservica, and if you look at also the kind of work that most archival institutions like PROV or National Archives have done, it's really been kind of finding digital vellum type solutions where we're kind of looking at the problem as one of file formats, and then we're working out, okay, how can we solve this in an automated way, whether it's kind of Xena, where you kind of identify a file format and you migrate it to kind of one of 15 known types that you think you can support, or PROV, which takes a very similar approach. But that's really how we were looking at it as well when we started the project. And that's why we said to just use the National Archives tools, because they had a pretty good tool set for really dealing with this problem. And certainly some of the material that we've accepted, we can treat in that way. So this is an example of one of the pilot projects that we worked on during the project phase, and it was the media releases of Christina Keneally. And this was just, it was just a bunch of documents, as Vint Cerf says. And it wasn't a vast archive of it, unfortunately. It was maybe about 300 PDF files of media releases. But certainly we could sort of push that through a system like Preservica or Archivematica, and it would be quite easy to work on that automatically. But that was only one of our pilot projects. We did 7 pilot projects, and there were a range of different types of systems. So some where it really was just a bunch of files that we could kind of view in the Vint Cerf way. But there were other systems as well. So this is the Status database. This is one of the oldest digital archives that State Records holds. It was actually transferred in about 1990 to State Records by the Tarquin Premier Cabinet. And it's the original database that was used to manage the records of the Chelmsford the Chelmsford Hospital Royal Commission of Inquiry. So this was, if you remember, in the 1980s and 1990s, there was a crisis in New South Wales mental health care relating to certain institutions, and the way that patients had been cared for in those institutions. So they were using controversial therapies like deep sleep treatment and electric shock treatment, and there was a commission of inquiry into this. Because it was such a had such a high public profile and was so sensitive, and there were so many people impacted, so patients and families of patients, the commission was one of the very first New South Wales courts of inquiry or courts to use a kind of e-court system. So this is a very early e-court system, and they used it because they knew that they were going to get flooded with inquiries, and they wanted to be able to search the documents and the transcripts of the commission and respond to public inquiries during the process of that commission. So this is one of the earliest digital archives that State Records accepted, and it's in an old legacy database format called the Status Database. It's a 16-bit Microsoft application that accesses the Status Database, so it can't run on current computers, which are mostly 64-bit. You can run it on a 32-bit Windows environment. So to actually operate it, we can open up a virtual machine on a modern PC that gives us a 32-bit environment, and then that 32-bit environment can run this 16-bit Microsoft application. And if you do that, you can kind of get a little picture like this. And if you remember going to libraries in the sort of 1990s, when you had to, if you wanted to order a book, it wasn't a matter of typing into a search box, it was a matter of hitting numbers to go through these menus. So you go, okay, I want to search all documents, and then you would type it in, and then you would hit sort of 3 or 4. So it was a kind of numerical numbers it was one of those, just like an old OPAC. And really, that's the way. Without any treatment of this consignment, that would be the way that any users of the system would be required to come and use it. So we'd need to get people to come into our reading room and sort of remember, if they were alive at that period, how you operate those kind of systems. If it was some kind of tween or young person who was used to like swiping stuff, we'd probably have to sit with them for half an hour to kind of brief them on 1990s technology. So Christina Kelly is one example. Status Database is another. But these are only two examples. But really, the challenge we face is that there are so many different ways you can keep digital records, and also constantly evolving too. So the challenge isn't so much about, as Vince said, old formats of documents, because we don't just care about documents. It's the whole diversity of the ways in which digital information can be managed and kept and created. So there's this diversity of systems, and we can't control that. We can't tell, and sorry, can you use Objective for your rollout because that's easier for us to support, and so on. And we can't tell any agencies that you have to use EDRMS for all of your digital record keeping either, because that's not the message that we want to send. So we're dealing with a kind of a diversity of systems. Obsolete formats is a problem, but so are legacy sort of technologies. So in this case, it's not really the format that is so concerning. It's just that the whole technological infrastructure necessary to use that format at all. So the layers of 16-bit, 32-bit, 64-bit applications are difficult. We're not just talking about documents on their own. We're talking about documents that are part of complex systems. So if Anne ever wanted to transfer records out of her OneTrip, we're not just interested in getting the ministerial PDF that was signed. We're also interested in the metadata that was used to describe that and its relationship to other records. So how do you kind of manage the transfer of interrelated systems as well? And this is probably the biggest challenge that we face, and that of integration. And so this is another kind of parallel with Anne's talk, is where Anne's migrating from 6 trim systems into one, and you didn't want them all to be, you didn't want to have 6 silos in your new trim system. You wanted them to be integrated, and you had that challenge of there were 315 fields used across those 6 systems, and there were 150 document types. And so moving multiple systems into one environment, how do you integrate them in a way that people can just access that as really one system? And so that's so Yeah, and model is really the kind of, is what we're also hoping to achieve with the Digital State Archive, is that we're not just a big warehouse of siloed systems that a user would need to then come to us and then kind of log in and do navigation of this system or of a shrimp system. We want to be able to bring all of these systems together into one environment that can be searched and made available online and that people can use easily. And then also support. So for older systems, just having access to the people and the knowledge and the technical resources to understand and work with those systems as well is a challenge. So I've got another quote. So this is from a Belarusian author, Evgeny Morozov, and he's written a few books about the folly of trying to solve every modern challenge with kind of simple technological solutions. So he's not just looking at the kind of work we do, but he's looking at sort of e-health systems and trying to fix kind of hospitals by just kind of giving everyone iPads, for example, or an education, trying to fix educational problems by, you know, computerizing everything. And he says, okay, well, just step back, because as Anne says, it's not all about technical problems and technical solutions. And really, if you approach it in that kind of narrow mindset, there's a danger that you're actually going to kind of simplify things too much. And so the imperfection and ambiguity of our systems is important. And if you try to just kind of steer everything into a kind of the digital Bellium solution or a Rosetta solution, for example, if you're trying to take a cookie cutter approach to problems, then you can end up simplifying too much. So the real problem here is that if we take too much of a simple solution to the challenge of digital preservation, which is tempting because it's such a kind of thorny problem, and we do want to end up with a single system that is easy to interrogate. But if we try to apply a simple-minded technical solution, then there's a danger that we'll compromise the integrity of those systems that we're moving into the Digital State Archive. And so that's really the kind of background for the approach that we've taken at State Records. And so here's a poster that's on the Futureproof blog that kind of gives an overview of the approach. But I'll go to a slide that kind of shows it a bit better. So this is really the reason why at State Records we moved away from talking about transfers of digital archives and thinking about it as a simple transfer problem to talking about this challenge of moving digital archives from your environment into ours as one of migration. So in much the same way that Anne's been working on a migration from six systems into one system, we view the work we do as really the same kind of work. And it's working with the agency to migrate their digital records that are required to State Archives into our environment. And we use the word migration deliberately because we want to give people we don't want to give people the impression that it's just a matter of handing us disk or a hard disk or a CD-ROM with the documents and we'll just stick them into our magical solution. But that really the same kind of work that Anne's undertaking at the moment of working out who the users are, working out how systems have been used, looking at the metadata in those systems, working out how you're going to map and migrate that information forward is exactly the sort of work that we'd be doing too in moving digital records from agency environments into State Records environments.
It's the same basis.
Right. Oh, good. Yes.
It's precisely the same.
Yeah. So in developing the migration methodology, we looked at PRINCE2, so that's probably why we've come across a... Yeah, so it's a kind of cut-down version of PRINCE2, but we worked through these four stages with agencies. So if you're an agency that wants to transfer digital archives into our custody, this is the process that we'll take you through. From an agency perspective, it's really just a matter of getting in touch with us, and then we'll start in the project planning phase, and then we'll work through these other three phases. So project planning is just about scoping the project, working out who on agency and on our side will be involved, whether it will cost anything for an agency or for us, and what other resources, so technical and people resources, are necessary. Working out an indicative time frame for the project, We also look at benefits and benefits realization for agencies, so that if there are costs for agencies, and there can be. So for example, we've had projects in the past where agencies have had to engage external vendors to do some transformation of their data into kind of forms that were more easy for us to take. So if we are including project costs, and certainly there will always be some time required from agency in terms of allocating their resources to the project. We'd look at the benefits too, so that if it just starts with a project plan and we can't immediately work on it, but then they need to take that project plan and get it approved, or they need to make a business case to undertake this project, by kind of outlining the benefits, we can assist agencies in kind of making that case. And really there are tangible benefits to transferring digital archives for agencies that have done it. And that really is that if you've got legacy systems that you aren't using for your ongoing business use, they can be expensive to maintain. So we've had agencies that have been paying tens of thousands of dollars a year to external vendors just to maintain legacy systems that they weren't using themselves. And so often there's those tangible benefits, so we like to identify those. The end product of a project planning phase is a project plan, and we get the agency to approve this, and we'll approve it at our end too. And then that gives us something accountable to hold ourselves accountable to during the rest of the project. The second phase is the migration planning phase. That will culminate in a second plan. So out of our projects, there are two main documents. There's a project plan, and then there's the migration plan. The migration plan spells out what we're going to do to your digital information in order to move it into our custody. And we also get agencies to sign off on that too, just so that they're confident that in any transformation of their information that we do, that they'll still be confident to rely on that information if they need to recall from digital archives in the future. And there's a project closure phase, which is handovers, saying what we've done, and it's also talking about any follow-on action. So wait 6 months, and then you can destroy the source material if you so wish to, and that sort of thing. So the migration planning phase is one of the more involved parts of our work, and this is really where... So agencies, there might be cases in which we'd get agencies to assist us during this phase, but often it's our team doing this work, and that's looking at things like identifying the metadata in the system, working out whether we need all of that metadata, working out how we can map that metadata to more kind of common terms that we can use within the digital archive. So when Anne talks about 315 fields, that's quite common that agencies...
They're only the ones we don't use.
No, yes, and then there's a lot of unused things as well. So that's the metadata we might not keep. But when an agency uses one term for a ministerial... So you had 13 terms for
ministerial? We had 13 record types.
13 record types for ministerial. So we do look to make agencies' metadata kind of consistent across agencies. So that if in the future that we have users that are looking for ministerial records, that they don't just find ministerial records from fax because they've used one term, they find ministerial records wherever they exist within the digital archive. We think about researchers and what their access requirements will be. So often that means if for example, we've taken a digital video format, that we might convert it to formats that will play on iPhones, for example. So we transform information not just for preservation purposes, but also to support access in our environment. And we also think about the system interface itself and look and feel and how to support different modes of access. So if we go back to Chelm, so there's a good example. So our approach with the Chelmsford database is an interesting case study. And how much time do I have to...
You had 30 minutes, but that's all right.
Sorry, I've probably taken 25 minutes.
That's all right.
But if I take 10 more minutes, is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's okay, because we'll have a little bit of time, but...
We'll have 20 minutes, yeah. So Status Database is interesting because it was a system that was... It was really just, I think, used in one or two places in New South Wales. It was it was a legal database. So if you look, this is what we did with this. We did a Google search for status database. And if you do a Google search for status database, you get a lot of hits, but none of them relate to the status database. And that's because you get status error message or status. So status is such a common word that it really was very difficult to find any information about this database at all. It was a matter of trawling through the search results. I think we got to about the 33rd page of results, and there was a Google Books reference, and it was a and then looking at the book, it was a book on legal information systems from the 1990s, and it said, oh, there's this system called the Status Database that was developed by Atomic Energy Agency in the UK in the 1970s. And it was used to manage legislation. So we found that. So at this point, we didn't even know that status database was a particularly illegal database. So having that information, we then found a few more hits. So we got something from the National Library of Australia, which said that status database was used in New South Wales by this particular company, and they were selling it to some government departments. Go, yes, that's it. So searching for that information, so we searched for the company, we found a LinkedIn reference to the chief scientist of that company from the 1990s. And he'd said, and if you look at his LinkedIn profile, it said, chief scientist in this period implemented the status database in New South Wales government agencies. Yes. So we found a person. And this person was working as a professor at ANU. So I said to Glenn, who was working on the project, send that guy an email, see if he's got any information that will help us. And so Glenn sent him an email, and he was very helpful, because under his desk at his work, he had old printouts of the original, because he was the programmer that we'd been working on, and he had printouts of the underlying file format for the status database. It was in the block, you've got pointers, and so it was quite technical, but it was enough for us to then say, okay, this is what the underlying database files mean, and we could then write a script that could run over the whole database, the database backup files. We could run a script over those and then pull out all of the text from the database. So we can turn this status database into plain text files, quite big plain text files that contain the full transcript, the list of exhibits, all of the testimony. So all of the information here we can pull out into plain text files that we can then... it's much easier now for us to then provide access to those to the public. So if someone wants the transcript of the status database, they no longer need to access in this window where they'll get about maybe 150 characters in the window as well because of the resolution. So although you've got a nice big monitor now, you really get that much information from the database. It's just a matter of going like this. We can give people a text file containing the whole transcript now. So when we think about access, we want people to be able to do a Google search, find chunks of information, as long as access directions permit as well, because we don't want people to find information that will upset or that will kind of compromise access. Come to our website, be able to access full text from the commission, but we might also want to give people this original look and feel as well, because people come with different types of research inquiries to us. So there might be some users that will get value from being able to work with the information as it was as the agency used it, but then for most of our users as well, just to be able to read the transcript and learn about what happened to themselves or to their relatives, and not having to do that is a powerful thing. So in migration planning, we think about what our users, the different ways in which they'd like to be able to access information, and then we build those into our migration plans. So we do take a very kind of custom case-by-case approach. But by taking a project-based, by layering project methodology over that, we can make kind of a case-by-case approach workable by ensuring that we're keeping to our timelines by sort of keeping things on track in this way. And also because we have this kind of methodology in place, it also allows us to use migration plans and use project closure documents as ways to reuse knowledge between projects. So although we take a kind of custom case-by-case approach to digital preservation, we can reuse all of the lessons we learned in previous projects, so they get a lot easier over time. And also any kind of decisions we make in terms of, okay, we're going to transform this type of file to this type of file, we record those decisions in registers, so we can just reuse all of that in future projects. We also have we've got two registers, one of preservation pathways, so that's if we decide to make a transformation between digital formats. And we have a metadata registry as well. So when we identify suitable terms for use in the digital archives, we register those so that when we encounter similar information in other systems that we've migrated from agencies, we can map to those terms. Probably not the most revealing image, I'm sorry, but we do make our metadata registry available online though as well, so that it can be a resource too for agencies that are looking at the fields and terms they're using in their systems today, and if they want to kind of adopt similar terms to us, then that would be great. And we use common vocabularies for all of those terms, so looking at DC and schema.org and those kind of common vocabularies. I've given myself another 2 minutes. then we'll give 3 minutes for questions. I said at the beginning that I talk about what's next. So the Digital Archives team, we manage the New South Wales Open Gov and the Digital State Archive, which puts us in quite a unique position amongst digital archives programs in Australia. And it's interesting because if you look at Data New South Wales, so this is a screenshot from Data New South Wales, and I did a search for media releases, and you find that we get that 8 different agencies that put media releases onto Data New South Wales. If you do a search for media releases on OpenGov New South Wales and other of the sites that we maintain, you find 272 individual media releases that have been uploaded as PDFs by Department of Premier and Cabinet and other agencies. If you search in the Digital State Archive, you'll find media releases. So in this case, it's the records of Christina Keneally. I don't have another one, but if you also search in the State Archives collection itself, so our physical collection, you'll find even more media releases. These are all media releases that have been published and shared by New South Wales government agencies, and they've used different platforms to do that. Hopefully they're all platforms that we control at State Records. And so one thing that we'd like to do in the future is to be able to merge all of those separate resources together into a single search for the New South Wales public, so they can do a single query for different types of government information, and they'll find that information, whether it's a data set on Data New South Wales or a publication on OpenGov, or a digital archive in our custody, or physical archives in our custody too. But also thinking from the agency side, what we'd also like is to give agencies more options in terms of how they publish and share and transfer information to us. One challenge with our approach, with taking a project management based approach, is that it kind of puts up a barrier to agencies that, okay, this is going to be a big undertaking, that it's going to take time and resources. And if they've just got a zip disk of some PDFs that they want us to transfer into our custody, it can be a big turnoff to kind of take this approach. So marrying it, though, with Open Government Data New South Wales, we can give more self-service options. So if it is just a series of simple documents that you want to transfer into our custody, by putting them on OpenGov, if they can be published online, everything on OpenGov is actually stored on the same infrastructure as the Digital State Archive, and we consider any information published on OpenGov as actually a transfer into the Digital State Archives. So it gives you two channels. So if you've got simple documents you want to kind of share and absolve yourself of your state records responsibilities, you can use OpenGov. But if you've got a more complex system like Chelmsford Database or OneTrim that you want to move not just simple objects, but you also want to move metadata into our custody, then you can take that other pathway, the migration methodology pathway with the Digital Archives team. And also with Data New South Wales as well. So if it's a spreadsheet of information, or if it's a simple database or data set that you can share, then you can use that as a channel. So thinking for the public about having a kind of single access point to all of this government information, but also for agencies that you don't just have one way of transferring information into the digital state archives, but there can be different pathways depending on the complexity and the nature of your material, so that we can almost get the best of both worlds. So we can sort of get Evgeny's his approach, which would be to kind of work with disorder and imperfection, but we also get Vince Cerf's automation approach. So if it is simple and capable of being automated, then we'd like to get that as well. And so that's really where we'll be going over the next few years, is working out how we can make those channels more easily available to agencies and give agencies more choice in the way that they transfer digital information into our custody. Thanks
Fantastic.
Very much.
Thank you very much, Richard. Thank